welcome to today's Create the Courage to be Fearless podcast. And I want to thank you for joining me. My name is Anita Matu, and I am a mindset coach and a mentor. Every Tuesday, I'll be releasing a new podcast episode, which will either be a conversation with a courageous guest, a solo episode with me, or a masterclass full of insightful nuggets and wisdom. Each episode is designed to inspire you and help you discover and connect with that place of courage within you. So whether you're a first-time listener or you are one of my regular subscribers, I want to thank you for taking the time to join me. Now, let's get started with this week's episode.
Human beings are built in terms of our capacities for creativity, for wisdom, for resilience. It's actually in the less, right? It's in the willingness to get off your own back and to see and savor and enjoy and stop. Yeah, and I think in the courage, in the conversation about courage, sometimes we forget how quiet courage can be. It's a really powerful reminder.
Today's guest is Mahima Shrestha. Starting her career in advertising and PR in Nepal, Mahima soon found herself following an unlikely and curiosity-driven career path. First into branding, and then crisis communication, then coaching, creating jobs and roles that would solve interesting challenges. Mahima works with entrepreneurs, innovators, activists, and changemakers, bringing bright people together to solve complex problems. Welcome, Mahima.
Thank you very much, Anita. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. I'm excited for our conversation. What me is too. One of the most courageous things that you have done?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, for me, when I think of courage and like what takes courage or has taken courage for me, I think of all the small things. Like, it's like I have less thinking when big things happen and kind of the ground shifts under my feet, you know. I recognize that I'm probably not single-handedly going to be able to control all the factors in this story. Whereas the small daily things, like those really do take courage for me to, yeah. So for me, the most courageous thing, I would say, is like a present continuous, you know, it's everyday moments that are not dramatic enough to draw attention, but they, yeah, for me, that's probably where I most see my courage at work.
And that's brilliant. That's a nice way to put it. I really like that. Yes, because it is an ongoing thing. Tell me about your career in advertising and PR in Nepal.
Well, I always thought I would do something with writing, actually. But then my first job was in PR. And the way that happened was that actually I happened to meet at a party a person who was head of an ad firm. And he said, "Oh, it's good. It's interesting that you've just graduated in journalism and you're just starting to work, but you're a PR girl. Mm-hmm. So if you want a job in PR, you come meet me." And I did. And I mean, I never knew that there was a job that just fit me. Mm-hmm. It was creative. It was interesting. I joined originally in doing PR for social brands and causes, and then eventually branching out to commercial brands as well. But for me, I really learned how much I learned about people and stories. When I think of PR, I think that's what I really learned. I learned to have an ear out for people, connection, and their stories. I think of it as sharpening the edges, you know, the distinctions that they have that sometimes we're not willing to own. So PR for me was an education in that.
That's really an interesting point to make, because I've not seen it like that before. And it's really good compared to the usual PR, you know, that I've heard about. So this is an interesting take on it. It's the stories. That's absolutely fantastic. How did your journey start working in crisis communication? And did this naturally fall into place from your experiences?
No, I mean, it happened to me really the first time, because I had a client and I was looking after their brand and corporate communications. and somebody planted a bomb in their office. So it, I mean, I didn't plan to be educated in how to help people handle a crisis, but it kind of happened, right? Because then all of the media come, and you have next of kin, and you have a public facing side to manage, and I discovered a passion I never knew I had. I realized like people on, you know, what we think of as the worst days.
Yes.
The worst thing that could happen, or the worst day of my life, or in my company, like people who are affected by that, it makes such a difference to have a team that is trained, that's present, that's prepared, versus not. And I really discovered I had a passion for that and for making that better for people. And so then I continued to branch out into crisis and reputation management, mental health during crisis, and that really became my primary world.
And I really imagine that to be so rewarding, absolutely rewarding. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people often ask me because on the personal side, also I am working with people when they're kind of at what they would call their rock bottom so far, right? And people ask me whether it gets depressing, you know, to always be hearing about people on their worst day. And actually, for me, it's been the opposite. I never was that interested in conversations like that. And over time, I've discovered like there's such a resilience to people. For me, I think that I meet people at their most powerful. Because I see that when things are great, there's so much we're unwilling to risk, unwilling to do, unwilling to change, even though we want to, but we feel we can't. Whereas when people are at rock bottom, they are willing. And for me, that is among the most powerful things about a human being, to meet them in a moment when they are willing.
That's really interesting, for sure. Yes, definitely. And I can totally understand that, yes. And it's like in those moments that you've got to dig deep and have that strength. So in a way,
And you discover that you have it, you know, like underneath all your chatter, you discover that you have it.
Absolutely. Yes, I can understand that. So you were in the 2015 Nepal earthquake, and that killed many people and injured so many more. Tell me about that. And what were your realizations, Mahima?
At that time, so 2015, it was actually almost this time, it was in April 2015. And I had started working in crisis, but I had not started my foray into coaching and mental health as it relates to periods of crisis. And it was really that experience of the earthquake during which I had kind of my first glimpses into the resilience and the mental health, if you like, that's available in people, right? And so I remember just before that, I had encountered a whole body of work and a whole lot of teachers because I was trying to understand crisis. And I was trying to understand how, like, what happens when people come to you X and when they leave, their interaction with you, their why. And so I'd started already to speak to a whole range of people who were good at that, who understood something about it. They had very different thinking on why that happened, but they had results nonetheless. And one of the things that had really kind of struck me was how many of them highlighted the role of our own thinking in creating this experience, right, that we're having. I mean, we might say, I'm afraid, or we might say, I hate this, or I'm in a funk. And somehow, like, the number of people I had been learning from who highlighted that all of those were symptoms of a thinking brain, a thinking mind, right, a thinking human being. And so this link between my experience of life and my thinking had kind of, it had got flagged for me a little bit, you know. And then I noticed a couple of things, like during the earthquake, we had one big earthquake. And then weeks of aftershocks, I think about 2 weeks of aftershocks. And then another big earthquake. Mm-hmm. And nobody told me that. I mean, in all of my education as a citizen of an earthquake-prone country, nobody said, hey, look, earthquakes, this is how they work. You have a big one, and the ground doesn't really stop moving for, like, sometimes weeks after, right? And so by the time the aftershocks start, we're just losing our minds because mm-hmm. you're thinking, you know, you think the worst is over, but you think, oh, my God, no, it could ongoingly be yet to come, mm-hmm. you know? And somewhere in the middle of that, I remember being struck by a couple of moments, like, really stand out for me about that. One of those mm-hmm. is standing in the driveway and kind of the house is going like this. And then it stops. And I haven't even noticed it stopped because I'm busy scaring myself, right? I'm busy thinking of making up images of what might happen to it, remembering images from the news and the sounds and what ifs. And I realize, oh my God, my head is full of thinking of all kinds of scenarios that are not actually happening where I'm standing right now. Right. And that no wonder I'm shit scared. Right. No wonder I have all of this emotion because my nervous system conforms to me. Its reaction to all the things I'm thinking, right? And so I, like, that was one moment that really struck me. I was like, interesting. Like, maybe you know, something is going on that I have not noticed before. And then the other thing I noticed is that how much I had given weight to fear as a tool for survival. And I didn't see the role of my thinking in that. I just thought if I felt all of these sensations that I've labeled fear, then it must be because I have reason to be afraid. I just never saw the connection between all of the things I was playing in my head and what my body was doing, right? Mm-hmm. And so really it was for me at that point that I realized that an education in crisis, whether it's crisis management, crisis communication has to come with an education on how we work, on our own mental health, on our own mental dynamics, how we work as human beings, and how that affects what we see and therefore what we're capable of facing, what decisions we're capable of making, what actions we're capable of, whether how much bandwidth we have for other people and to care for them. Like, I saw that all of those things that are in our trainings were going to be harder to do if we didn't understand this first bit. And so that really was the beginning of my seeing that there was a certain mental health education that was necessary for most of us to equip us to handle what we're actually perfectly capable of handling.
That's absolutely amazing, especially like, in something like an earthquake, you can actually realize distinctions like that and realize, hold on a minute, this is what's happening. I mean, it's mind-blowing. So that was brilliant. And now you can really embody and help others because you can understand it for yourself. So it's brilliant. I absolutely love that. Yes.
Yeah, I understand also that insight is possible, you know, like baked into our capacity for thinking is our capacity for fresh thinking. And I wouldn't have guessed that those would be the moments when it would decide to come. But yeah, that's kind of for me part of the ongoing surprise, really, of doing this work.
Yeah, and like helping others now. So tell me about the people you help and who do you help with your work?
So I started out actually doing a lot of work with organizations, institutions, places where I felt that there was just a lot of suffering that maybe there didn't need to be or there could be less. And so I started out with that. And now very much I work more one-on-one with individuals. And I call that turning points, right? Individuals who are at turning points. Mm-hmm. Now, a turning point might be a crisis. But it might also be something that you have wanted for a long time and have not yet managed to do for yourself, to walk yourself into. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I mean, often I find that I'm walking my clients through some of the darkest days of their lives. And it's an extraordinary privilege and also an extraordinary gift, because we see this common ground of capacity that we have as human beings, that if we never meet people in those moments, then I would never have known, I don't think.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's all coming from the inside. What do we explore? What are we doing in any given moment? Mm-hmm. Who are we being? We can be the scared person full of fear, or we can actually think, hold on a minute, that's just my thinking. I can move on from this. Let's actually address what's really happening here. That's brilliant, brilliant. What resources do you recommend, tools, daily tips to anyone that wants to start exploring new possibilities in their life?
The single most recommended resource that I often prescribe to my clients is a good friend. We underestimate the value of just another human being who has complete goodwill for us. And we often deprive ourselves of the gift of that by making so many other things more important. But I would say, in terms of resources that are available or possible to make available to ourselves, I would say a good friend is invaluable.
Well, that's brilliant. Yes. So where can the listeners find you online? What's your website, Mahima?
You can find me at, I'll spell it for you, but I'll say it first, mahimashrestha.com. That's my name. And it's mahimashrestha.com. You can also find me on Facebook, although I'm a very erratic poster, so that might not always be very much. But my website is primarily where you can find me.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And you could go to Spotify or whatever you use for podcasts and do a search for my name. There's a couple of other interviews you might find.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your insightful wisdom and knowledge with us today. And by doing so, I know you have helped so many others. Mahima Shrestha.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. We are all about create the courage to be fearless. So what is your definition of courage?
I think I've used that word a couple of times today as well. But I think willingness is a really good, it's a really good substitute for me for that word courage. A little bit of willingness, it goes a long way. Yeah, it does. And I mean, it's one of those things where we can be in the habit of being so driven and hard on ourselves, right? And yet the whole magic, in a way, of how human beings are built in terms of our capacities for creativity, for wisdom, for resilience, is actually in the less. Right? It's in the willingness to get off your own back and to see and savor and enjoy and stop. Yeah, and I think in the courage, in the conversation about courage, sometimes we forget how quiet courage can be. It's a really powerful reminder.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Create the Courage to be Fearless with Anita Mattu. I'd love you to let me know what your thoughts of today's episode and what your key takeaways are. So do leave a comment below. It's all about sharing. So if you have enjoyed the content, give me a like and share it far and wide. Post it over on Instagram stories and tag the link wherever you are listening to this episode. Post it on social media, share it with your friends, and don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. This really helps the show reach more people, and together we impact more lives. Thank you, and until next time, goodbye for now.